Chapter 12, text number 5. Shah klesho dhikataraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukham deha vaddera vapyate. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. The discussion on impersonalism and Mayavad philosophy was interrupted by two sessions in which we had a discussion about the material and the spiritual energies of Lord Krishna. So today we will come back to our earlier theme and continue with the subject of impersonalism. Now, we have discussed in two earlier lectures this very, very important subject. And probably for this session and for one more perhaps, we will be discussing the same subject or different aspects of it. Although this particular subject is a little more philosophical, but it is very, very important to have a very clear understanding. Sometimes people ask, why is it so important whether God is personal or impersonal? What difference does it make? So long as I'm chanting the name of God, so long as I'm leading a pure life, so long as I'm coming and associating with devotees, I'm doing seva, how does it matter whether God is personal, impersonal? All this is very highly theoretical, philosophical. It's not very practical. It is not of any practical use to me to understand. But you see, the whole basis of our lifestyle is our philosophy. It is based upon this philosophy that we are leading our life in this particular way as devotees or Vaishnavas. If our philosophy, if Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita said something different, perhaps we would be doing something else. Because Lord Krishna is giving us a very clear understanding of what the goal of our life is and how we should achieve it. Therefore, having understood this very clearly, we are accepting it in our life. Now, the very heart of our bhakti philosophy is that Krishna is a person. But of course, as you know, and as we have discussed several months ago, he is not an ordinary person like us. He is a person. He has personality. He has individuality. But he is not an ordinary person like you and me, but he is the Supreme Person. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purna Purushottam. Purusha Uttam. Another name of Krishna is Purushottam. Therefore, to understand that Krishna is a person is at the heart of the philosophy of Bhagavad Dharma or Sanatana Dharma. If we are not very, very clear about this and sound in our understanding of why this is so, we will eventually have trouble in our spiritual life. If our faith in the process of bhakti, in the holy name, is not based upon a sound philosophical understanding of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, then in times of trouble, and troubles will come, because this is Dukkhalayam. In times of trouble, when we are going to be tested severely for our faith, at that time we may find that our faith gets shaken. So therefore it is very, very important to have a very clear-cut understanding of various important aspects of this Vaishnava philosophy. That is why we are taking pains, even if it means that there are some portions that many people are not able to follow, or even sometimes it may got a little philosophical. But definitely, at least if we discuss it in four lectures, at least 50%, if we are clear about it, at least then by constant repetition, the matter gets imprinted in our mind, and then we will be very clear about this point. So that is the reason also that time and again the same subject is repeated. This is also a technique that is used in the Shastra. In the Shastra we find, especially when you're reading Prabhupada's books, Sometimes people say, oh, it is boring, because he says the same thing again and again. Because we keep forgetting. There is need for constantly reminding us of the basic principles of our philosophy. So therefore, to have very clear understanding about Krishna being a person is at the heart of our philosophy. And if you do not get this point clear, there is no question of bhakti. So can you give me one reason why we give so much emphasis? Why is it so important to understand whether Krishna is a person or whether he is impersonal? Why is it important for us to understand this point? Can anyone say? We have discussed this earlier also. Even if you are not sure, you can still say. Yes? Talk of bhakti or love. Can there be love between you and some impersonal thing? Really, that is correct. Relationship. Bhakti implies a relationship. Because bhakti means love. You have to love a person. You cannot just love some impersonal void. And God is a person. And that is why that bhakti is a tangible reality. The impersonalistic understanding of bhakti is that bhakti can be at best a stepping stone. That bhakti is just one path by which you can achieve the absolute and then you dispense with it because you become the absolute or you are the absolute and you realize that. But the bhakti philosophy states that there are three realities. The Jivatma, Krishna and bhakti. Because the relationship between the Jivatma and Krishna is one of bhakti or love. So love is possible only amongst individuals, among people, individuals. So Krishna is an individual, Krishna is a person, and we are persons. Eternally we are persons. So therefore, if at the very outset we are going to say that Krishna is impersonal, then there is our bhakti is finished there. When there is no question of bhakti, and no question of Bhagavad Gita, no question of Bhagavatam. So this is a very fundamental cornerstone of our philosophy. That is why we must be very clear why we say Krishna is a person. Krishna has emphasized in many shlokas. But unfortunately, we find that there will be many other philosophers and many other interpretations of the Shastra which put forward the impersonalistic understanding. And if you are going to associate with other people in the outside world, some of whom may be interested in spiritual life, invariably you will hear the impersonalistic understanding. And when you hear this very often, your mind may get agitated. Is it really true that Krishna is a person? How can God be a person? Because as we have discussed earlier, being a person according to our everyday mundane conception means that he has to be a limited person. But Krishna is not such a limited person. Krishna is an unlimited Satchidananda Vigraha person. So therefore, to strengthen our faith and understanding against the onslaught of impersonal philosophy which will come and afflict itself upon you from time to time, we have to become philosophically strong in its conception. So we have already dealt with two shlokas in this respect. One was, avyaktam vyaktim apannam manyante mam abuddhayaha, in which Lord Krishna explains that there are those who believe, manyante mam abuddhayaha. They think that avyaktam vyaktim apannam. They think from the avyakta, from the impersonal, I have become personal. So they think that my form is now personal, but ultimately, originally, actually it is impersonal. There is a transformation from impersonal to personal. And such people, Krishna says, manyante mam abuddhayaha. They are less intelligent. Then, the second shloka we saw in this respect was brahmanohi pratishtaham. Please try to remember these two words, or these three words. Brahmanohi pratishtaham. Very clearly Lord Krishna is explaining in the 14th chapter of the Gita that he is the basis and the rest and the origin of the impersonal Brahman. So Krishna is the origin of Brahman. And we also saw that the absolute truth can be understood in three phases. What are those three phases of understanding the absolute truth? Can anyone say? Yes? Jivatma? Not Jivatma, Paramatma. Yes? Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. What is Brahman? Yes? It is the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth. What is Paramatma? It is the localized aspect to be found where? In the heart of every living being, And also, in every atom, the same form of the Lord, who is present in your heart and my heart as a super soul, He is also present inside every atom. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. Inside every atom, Anu also He is present. And what about Bhagavan? Who is Bhagavan? Yes? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is called Krishna. So, this is Bhagavan. Vadanti tat tattavidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti syabdyate. The Srimad Bhagavatam very emphatically declares, the absolute truth is to be understood in these three phases, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And they are progressively higher and higher stages of realization of the absolute truth. Sometimes, you may have noticed, if you're traveling in a train and you're seeing the countryside, and perhaps in the distance as you're looking out of the window, you're seeing a hill in the distance, or maybe a mountain. And from the distance, the mountain, it just looks like a mountain. You're not able to discern anything more. Maybe some hazy color is there on the mountain, that's all. As you approach the mountain, then you can see that that hazy color is actually the tops of the trees. The green trees are there. It's just the green you can see. Understand, there are some trees. And as you approach even closer and probably pass by the trees, by the mountain or the hill, you will see that inside those trees there are so many branches and there is so much foliage, there are birds and so on and so forth. So you will see within that greater detail. So it's the same object, the mountain. But from different points of view, from different distances from the mountain, you saw it differently. The truth is the same, the mountain. Similarly, the absolute truth is one. But we see it differently according to our capacity to understand Him. According to our level of spiritual understanding, we are able to perceive that very same one unified absolute truth in three different levels and phases. So the distant, the most distant or furthermost understanding of the absolute truth is the understanding of Brahman, the impersonal aspect. As you approach the truth, absolute truth closer, you understand that the impersonal aspect is only one part of it. But actually there is a higher understanding, Paramatma. And then when you go even closer, become have a more intimate understanding of the Supreme Lord, you understand the absolute truth is not only Brahman and Paramatma, but ultimately He is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Brahman is realized by the Jnanis, who follow the path of Jnana Yoga. Paramatma is realized by the Ashtanga Yogis, the Dhyana Yogis. And Bhagavan is realized exclusively by the Bhaktas, the devotees. No one else but the pure Bhaktas can understand Shri Krishna as He is. And because the Shri Krishna is a source of Paramatma and Brahman, therefore one who understands Shri Krishna, he automatically understands Brahman and Paramatma. In other words, we have to understand very clearly from the purport of the Shastras that the devotee of the Lord, by virtue of his knowing Krishna, automatically knows and he has realized Brahman and Paramatma, and he has gone one step beyond. He has attained the ultimate understanding of the absolute truth, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. So this is a relative understanding, and this is very, very important. So please remember these three, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Please remember this example of the mountain, approaching the mountain from different viewpoints. Please remember what kind of people attain to what kind of understanding. And there are those, usually the Paramatmavadis and the Brahmavadis, their aim is to merge into the impersonal Brahman. Now, three Wednesdays back, we saw what exactly is this Brahman. It is the impersonal aspect of the Lord, certainly, but what exactly is it? It is the effulgence of the Lord, correct? Can you give an example? Illustration? Sun and sunshine. What the sunshine is to the sun, the Brahman is to the transcendental Divya, the divine body of Shri Krishna. Because Shri Krishna's body is not like your body and my body, material body. Even in a very exalted spiritual personality, you can see an effulgence, a teja, isn't it? That is because of spiritual power, of spiritual purity, that effulgence comes. So effulgence is an automatic natural quality of spirit. So Krishna is the source of everything. So Krishna's effulgence, His radiance, is the Brahman. the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, the Prakash that is emanating from him. And everything else is resting in this Brahman. So the Brahmavadis and Paramatmavadis, they simply want to go and merge into that Brahma Jyoti. And they want to extinguish their individuality. This is called spiritual suicide. They want to negate their existence. They want to negate their individuality and personality. But factually, it is not possible. Because a Jivatma is eternally a Jivatma. This is also a very important philosophical understanding. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamaivamsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. The Jivatma is my part and parcel, Sanatana, eternally. Lord Krishna never says that he is my part and parcel only till such time as he attains realization, self-realization. And then he becomes me. He never says like that. He says, Sanatana, he is my part and parcel. So therefore we should know that the concept of merging into the oneness of the Brahman, it is possible. We may be, go and exist in the Brahma Jyoti as a particle, but our individuality can never be lost. You see, the Jivatma, what is the dimension of the Jivatma? We have discussed way back about maybe 10 months ago. What is the dimension of the Jivatma? 10,000th part of the tip of a hair. That tiny, very so minute. And the Brahmavadis, who want to merge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, they will go there and in that atom, as that atomic spark, they will simply continue to exist in that Brahma Jyoti as they are. Just eternally existing. Just imagine, for example, if you were to become a particle and exist in the sunshine. Would you just like to stay in the sunshine, not doing anything? It's not possible. But at the same time, although you're not doing any activity, you're not engaged in any relationship with the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna, but you are existing as an individual. Your individuality is not extinguished. It is only covered over for the time being. Prabhupada gave a very wonderful analogy from the Shastra to illustrate this point. Sometimes you may see two objects. One is a green parrot and the other is a green tree. Now you may see the green parrot entering into the green tree and you may think that the parrot has gone in, it's all green. Green has gone into green and everything is green. So you may think the parrot is no more now. But is it true? The parrot has entered into the tree, but if you examine closely, you will find that he is in one of the branches, probably trying to taste some of the fruits. So in this way, the parrot may have appeared to have merged into the tree, but actually within the tree, his individuality is maintained. Likewise, the Jivatmas who are aspiring for Brahma Jyoti, they may attain to that situation, that state of existence, but they will remain like that. But because that state does not experience any higher bliss, there is no relationship with the Lord, therefore they eventually fall down and they come back into this material existence. So this process of trying to understand the Absolute Truth is very troublesome. In fact, Lord Krishna stating here in this verse, it is extremely troublesome. He says here specifically, klesha. Klesha means trouble, pain. And what kind of pain is it? Adhiktaraha. Adhik means very much. It is not only klesha, it is not only troublesome, but it is very troublesome. And in the third line, he also says, Gatir Dukham. The process of trying to attain impersonal liberation is also again fraught with so many difficulties and troubles. It is very, very painful for everyone. So why should we do it? Now, there are various reasons why this process of impersonal liberation is painful. But before we go on to that, we should know that this verse brings out one important point. And that is the difference between Bhakti Yoga and Jnana Yoga. The difference between the attempts of the Bhakta and the attempts of the Jnani to understand the truth. The Bhaktas, they follow the process of Bhakti Yoga. They are in direct touch with the Lord. And therefore they experience bliss. They are happy. The Jnanis, on the other hand, they think that this path of Jnana Yoga that they are following is meant for those who are intellectual, who are intellectually developed. And the path of Bhakti or Bhakti Yoga is for those who are sentimental, who are not intellectual, but they are sentimental. But factually we should know that the culmination of Jnana is Bhakti. One who has cultivated knowledge over many lifetimes, Lord Krishna says, ultimately comes and surrenders to the person Krishna. बहुनाम जन्मनामंते ज्ञानवान माम प्रपद्यते वासुदेव सर्वमिति स महात्मा सुदुर्लभ। अ पर्सन आफ्टर कल्टिवेटिंग नॉलेज फॉर मेनी लाइफ टाइम्स बहुनाम जन्मनामंते ही कम्स एंड सरेंडर्स टू कृष्णा माम प्रपद्यते। Having understood that Krishna Vasudeva has Sarvamiti, he doesn't say Brahman Sarvamiti, he doesn't say Paramatma Sarvamiti, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Vasudeva is another name for Krishna. Krishna is everything, he is the source of everything. And therefore he surrenders to Krishna and becomes his devotee. So factually the reality is that one who has become a devotee of Krishna has automatically accomplished all these things in his previous life. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very wonderful prayer by Devahuti. Mother Devahuti, she is the mother of Lord Kapila. Lord Kapila is an incarnation of the Lord, who taught Sankhya philosophy to his mother Devahuti. Now Devahuti, she makes some very wonderful prayers. Just like Kunti Maharani has also made some wonderful prayers in Bhagavatam. Like that, Devahuti mother also, she has made some very wonderful shlokas. And the shloka goes something like this. Aho bata shvapachota gariyan yajihva grivartate namatubhyam te postapaste jihvu sasnurarya brahmanuchurte namagrinantiyete. So Mother Devahuti says that those people who are chanting your names yajihvagre vartate namatubhyam, those people who are chanting your names, oh how glorious they are. Aho bata, how glorious are those people who are chanting your holy names. Shvapachoto gariyan, even if they are born in a family of dog eaters, even if they are chandalas, but because they are chanting your holy names, they are worshipable. Gariyan, they are fit to be worshipped by the whole world. And actually, then she goes on to say that in their previous lives, we should understand that they have done so many things. Number one, tepus tapas, they have done all kinds of tapasya, austerities. They have performed all kinds of austerities in the previous lives. Then, juhuvuhu, they have accomplished all kinds of homas and yagyas and fire sacrifices that also they have done in their previous lives. Sasnur, they have gone to all the holy rivers and taken bath in all the holy rivers in the previous lives. Arya, they have acquired all the good qualities of the Aryans or the civilized people, the spiritually cultured people. They have also acquired all those good qualities and done that in the past. Brahmanuchur, they have already studied all the Vedas and the Upanishads and the Shastras. The in-depth study of all of these Shastras, they have already done in the previous life. And therefore, they are able to come and chant the name of the Lord now. In other words, if we see someone is sincerely chanting the name of the Lord, and is trying to become a sincere devotee of the Lord, we should understand that already he has done all these things in the previous lives. He has done Jnana Yoga, he has done Dhyana Yoga, he has done all the other forms of spiritual practices in the previous life. So he need not do it again. So to those people who say that Jnana Yoga is actually superior than Bhakti, because Bhakti is meant for sentimentalists, the Shastra says that actually Bhakti is for those who have already accomplished Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga in their previous lives. Therefore we can see that without any doubt, this process of devotion to the Supreme Lord is superior, because it is easier and it is more direct. And what is more, even with the impersonal liberation, with the impersonal realization, you cannot attain to the highest understanding of the Lord. You can only at best attain to Brahman effulgence, and that is all. So in this way we can try to understand what are the various factors which make the process of impersonal realization very difficult. Number one, it is very difficult to conceive something impersonal. Can you try to conceive in your mind the Supreme Lord who is impersonal? Very difficult. It is not possible for us to come to terms with this understanding. Secondly, a person who is on this path, he has to study all the Vedas, all the Upanishads, Shastras, very, very scrutinizingly. He has to learn Sanskrit, very great detail, the grammar and everything. And then he has to try to understand all the various interpretations and try to twist and turn and try to understand all the various meanings. And he has to do so much hair splitting. It's a very, very dry and painful exercise. For years and years together, they may try to understand Shastra, what this word may mean, what that word may mean, and they may try to split up the various words and try to interpret the meaning of the Shastra in this way and that way. So it's very difficult, very painful, and it's very dry. There is no rasa, no taste, no nectar in this. And that's why we find that in spite of doing so many austerities, which are necessary, they fall down sometimes. And that's the third difficulty. That in this process of trying to understand God through the impersonal realization, you have to perform so many austerities that are very, very difficult to perform in Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is the age of the fallen people. Kali Yuga, nobody is able to do any kind of tapasya. It's very difficult. Even the simplest forms of tapasya, we find it very difficult. So if you want to understand the impersonal, you have to go through these very difficult tapasyas. So because these Brahmavadis or the Paramatmavadis, they cannot experience a higher taste, because they have not established a personal relationship with the Lord and there is no higher taste, then they lose their taste for their own sadhana and they fall down into materialistic activities. They come to the platform of social work, philanthropy, opening hospitals, opening schools at best. So therefore they lose their spiritual stratum or their spiritual status. They come down to that level. The bhakta, on the other hand, for him things are much easier. And it's not only easier, he's also able to achieve the highest understanding. As far as the difficulty to conceive the impersonal absolute truth, for the bhakta, Krishna makes it very easy, because he appears in the form of the deity, vigraha, archa vigraha, the Sri Murti of the Lord. Now, the Sri Murti of the Lord is also a very important element of our bhakti, the process of bhakti. Why? Because Krishna is a person, and in the Murti form, you are actually able to see that person. What is the difference between a deity and an idol? Can anyone say? When we discussed the shloka, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam, several months ago, we discussed these aspects. Does anyone remember? What is the difference between a normal statue or an idol on one hand and the deity that is established or installed in a temple? Pran Pratishtha is done, but what is the meaning of that? Why? How is this different than an ordinary idol? Even if you have not done Pran Pratishtha, but you are keeping a deity of the Lord in your home, that is also a deity. You may not have formally installed it by so many mantras and yajnas and so on, but because you are worshipping with devotion, Krishna is there in the deity, so that is as much a deity also. So what is the difference between an ordinary statue or an idol and a deity? Yes, but what is the speciality about the deity? It is the personal form of the Lord directly. You see, the Lord is very merciful. He has a form, but that form is spiritual. And because we are unable to see that spiritual form with our mundane material eyes, therefore He makes Himself visible to our material eyes by accepting the form of a deity. The deity, in the Shastras you find, both Saguna and Nirguna worship are recommended. Both are there. Saguna worship means the worship of the Lord with material qualities. So the Lord descends and takes the form of a deity which has material qualities, like it is made of stone, it is made of wood and so on. But in spite of the fact that the deity is made up of stone or wood or material qualities, we should know that actually the deity is non-different from Krishna. It is directly Krishna. There is one line, one devotee of the Lord prays, Pratima nahi tumi sakshat Vrajendra Nandan. He says, my Lord, you are not a Pratima. Pratima means just an idol. You are not just a Pratima. You are sakshat, directly. What? You are directly Vrajendra Nandan. Vrajendra Nandan means the son of Nanda Maharaj. You are Lord Krishna personally, directly. So the deity, when you have darshan here of Lord Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, so Sri Gopinath is directly Krishna Himself. There is no difference at all. It is only that He has appeared to our material vision in this form. And therefore, we are able to understand the form of the Lord and we are able to serve Him out of love. So He makes Himself accessible to us. Whereas an idol is just any concocted form. With your own fertile imagination, you can think of any form and you can worship But that will not lead you to the desired result. Srila Prabhupada gave a very wonderful example to illustrate the difference between the deity and... If you post it in the authorized post box of the Post and Telegraphs Department, then the letter will reach the desired destination in due course of time. But if you post that letter in any box that is lying on the street, or you post it in some other box, will it go? Will it reach? It will not reach. You may paint it red if you like. You may make it appear like a post box also if you like. But because it is not authorized by the PNT department, therefore, it will not reach the desired destination. So the deity or the Archa Vigraha, form of the Lord, is the authorized post box of the Lord to receive your petition, to receive your prayers, to receive your seva. So you give your seva, my Lord, please accept my service, please uplift me. You pray to the Lord and it is accepted because Krishna is directly there. But if you go to any statue, of course Krishna will listen if you are praying with a sincere heart. But he will listen by directing you to the real post box. That is the way he will direct you. But the authorized way for doing it is to worship the deity. And by worshipping the deity, automatically we get purified. And even a neophyte devotee, even a person who is very new in the path of bhakti, if he starts worshipping the authorized deity of the Lord with faith and devotion, he will feel and understand a reciprocation. He will feel the deity is responding to my worship. It is not simply a sentimental thing. It is a tangible reality of the process of bhakti. And it can be understood by one who has faith. So faith is what is necessary. And with faith, Krishna appears as he is as a person. Right now, we may think that this is just a statue. But when you start worshipping with faith, you will actually feel the reciprocation. Now, if this is, it's a spiritual sentiment, it is a spiritual emotion that is being manifested through the process of deity worship. Lord Krishna manifests himself and appears to you in proportion to the level of your faith and love. If you see him as a statue, he will also appear to you like a statue. And he will relate to you like a stone. A stone can have no relationship with you. But if you have a lot of faith and love, and you understand that he is not a statue but that he is a person, he is my worshipable Lord, then he will also relate to you in that way. There are so many wonderful stories in this regard. One time, there was a great saint. His name was Madhavendra Puri. He was the spiritual master of the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was the Param Guru of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Shri Krishna himself. So this Madhavendra Puri, he had excavated a deity of the Lord, Gopal. He got a dream one day in which Gopal appeared to him and said that I am hiding in the bushes, not very far from here. You please rescue me. You see, at the time what happened, when Lord Krishna was here, his great-grandson Vajranab installed many deities. And as the time went by, the Mughals came, and Aurangzeb in particular went to Vrindavan and he destroyed many temples. So in fear of Aurangzeb, many of the Brajabasis, they hid their deities in various places. And so they were hid in the jungles. So like that, this Gopal deity was also hid in the jungles. And when he decided in his own wisdom that he wanted to reappear again, he appeared in a dream to this great devotee Madhavendra Puri and said, you please now take me out from here. I am at a particular spot and you install me very nicely. So he took some villagers with him and he removed the deity. He found the deity of Gopal, very wonderful deity. He installed him and had wonderful festival. Of course, that itself is a story in itself. Some other time we may relate that. But one day Gopal again appeared to him in a dream and told him that I am feeling very hot. In Vrindavan, the summers are very, very hot. He said, I am feeling very hot. So you please go and get me some chandan, malaya chandan. And apply chandan, sandalwood paste in my body to cool me down. So it was a very difficult journey. But nonetheless, because it was an instruction of the Lord, Madhavendra Puri took it up in all great earnest. And he started embarked on his long journey. And as he was going, he reached a temple after a long journey of many days. He reached this temple of Gopinath, just like we have our Gopinath here. So there was another temple of Gopinath that he encountered on the way. So he took rest there for the night. And this temple of Gopinath was very famous for its kheer. The pujaris there would make very wonderful kheer, sweet rice, to offer to the Lord. And this kheer was so sweet and so delicious, it was renowned throughout. All over the land of India, the kheer of this Gopinath temple was very famous. So when Madhavendra Puri saw this kheer and he heard the glories of this kheer, so he saw the kheer being offered, and in his mind one desire came. Oh, I wish I could taste this kheer to know how I should prepare this for my Gopal in Vrindavan. When we see the prasad of the Lord, we feel like eating, but we feel like eating for our own sense enjoyment. Oh, it's so tasty, I would like to eat it for myself. But when Madhavendra Puri was thinking like that, he was thinking not in terms of his own enjoyment. He was thinking, let me taste it so I can know exactly how I can prepare this dish again when I go back to Vrindavan for my Gopal deity. But then he realized, oh, it is a great sin. What have I done? This kheer has not even been offered to the Lord, and I am thinking of eating it even before Krishna has eaten. Such a sinful person I am. You see, the system is that Krishna must eat first. That is the principle of prasadam. We cannot eat anything without Krishna eating first. That is a bhakta sentiment. So whatever he eats before eating, he offers to Krishna. So in the temple, whatever bhoga is made, or even in your home, before you offer it to Krishna, it is called bhoga. And after you offer it to Krishna, it becomes prasad. So bhoga is generally not meant to be seen by others, because others will then say, oh, such a wonderful dish, I want to taste it. So generally nobody should see it. That's why you have a separate kitchen for the deities, and then there are certain rules and regulations for who can cook for the deities. And even then, if the bhoga has to be taken from one place to the deity, if the deity kitchen is somewhere and the deities are somewhere else, the bhoga is covered with a cloth and then it is taken, so nobody else should see it. So in this way, somehow or the other, Madhavendra Puri happened to see it. So he was feeling very guilty. What have I done? And immediately he went away from there, feeling great disgust at himself. Of course, he's such a great exalted pure devotee. So he went away and sat in the marketplace somewhere, and he went to take rest. And in the night, the pujari of the temple of Lord Gopinath, he was taking rest, he was sleeping. And Gopinath came to him in a dream, and he told him that not far from here, in the marketplace, one very great devotee of mine called Madhavendra Puri, he is staying there. I have stolen one pot of sweet rice for him. So you please rise immediately from your sleep. You come to where I am, and behind my lotus feet you will find one pot. And you take that pot and you go to Madhavendra Puri and you give it to him. So the pujari was thinking, he woke up from the dream, and he remembered the dream very clearly. And he thought, how is that possible? Every day, and even last night, I removed all the pots of sweet rice. Not a single pot was there. And after that, I cleaned the whole altar. I cleaned with a nice cloth. And how is it possible that there is a pot of sweet rice there? But nevertheless, because it was an instruction of the Lord, so he arose quickly, took bath, and he went into the altar. And sure enough, behind the deity's lotus feet, behind the cloth, he lifted the cloth and he found, sure enough, there was one pot of kheer. So he was really perplexed. Where is this pot of kheer come from? I cleared out all the pots of kheer. And then he began to understand what a great devotee this Madhavendra Puri is. Because Lord Gopinath has stolen one pot of kheer just for the sake of his pure devotee, who had developed a desire in his heart to have that, to taste that kheer. And from that day on, that deity became known as Kheera Chora Gopinath, because he stole that kheer for his devotee. So anyway, the pujari then went on. He went to the marketplace. Is there a sannyasi called Madhavendra Puri here? He went on announcing, Lord Gopinath has stolen some kheer for you. I have got some kheer for you. So Madhavendra Puri was very surprised to hear his name being announced. And then anyway, he took that kheer and he tasted it, and he went into great ecstasy because it was so delicious. It was pure prasad. And then after that, Madhavendra Puri realized, because people started thronging to him, oh, such a great devotee, Gopinath has stolen kheer only for him. And then people came to have his darshan and his blessings. And being a very exalted devotee, he didn't want all this respect and adoration and worship. So he ran away from there. He said, I should not be here, because I will become famous here, and it's not good for me. So he went away from there. So anyway, the point of this whole story is the reciprocation of the deity. The deity is Krishna himself, Lord Gopinath himself. And because Madhavendra Puri was such a pure devotee of the Lord, the deity reciprocated. And this is a tangible reality for those who have faith, those who have devotion. For those who have no devotion, it will remain a statue. In fact, not only for a deity of stone, but even if you think of a deity in the mind, even then the Lord will reciprocate with you. In the Shastra it is said that the deity can be made of 8 substances, 8 different kinds of substances. You can have a deity made of stone, or of wood, or of metal, or clay, or sand, or jewels, or paint. And lastly, you can have a deity conceived in the mind. That is the 8th form of the deity. In the mind also. And in the mind also the deity will reciprocate with you if you have faith. Again, one very small wonderful story to show you how Krishna reciprocates in the personal form of the deity. There was one very poor Brahmin. And because he could not afford to buy a deity, so he was thinking, I still want to serve my Supreme, my dear Lord. And I want to worship Him, I want to do puja, archana, I want to offer Him wonderful foodstuffs. So I can't afford to buy a marble deity, so what should I do? So he said, let me imagine the wonderful deity of the Lord. So he imagined that he had a wonderful temple, and in that there was a wonderful altar, and a beautiful deity of Lord Krishna was there, and he was worshipping very opulently. So all day long, he would sit, and in his own mind, he would imagine, I'm getting up now, waking up the deity in the morning, I'm doing Mangal Arati, I'm doing Kirtan, then I'm offering foodstuffs, and then again after some time I'm doing Arati, then I'm going to the Ganges, I'm picking up the water in the pot, I'm bringing back the pot, I'm offering Ganges water to the deity, I'm bathing the deities in the Ganges water. And in this way, then he thought, I'm growing these fruits, I'm growing these vegetables for the deity, I'm plucking the vegetables and fruits, cutting them, I'm offering them to the deity. In other words, he was going through the whole process exactly as any pujari would do in an actual temple. The only difference is, he was doing it all in his mind. And he was doing it day after day after day after day. And he became so devoted to this particular form of the deity in his mind. And one day what happened, he wanted to make some kheer for the Lord, since we are on the subject of kheer. He wanted to make some kheer for the Lord. So he had put some milk to boil on the, of course those days didn't have gas, on the chula. So he had put some milk to boil, and he got busy in doing something else. And at that time, the milk, it started getting hot, and it boiled, and boiled over. So then he became very upset, and immediately came there, and he wanted to see after that whether the milk has become too hot. So he put his finger in the milk. Now mind you, he's doing all this in his mind. He put his finger in the milk and suddenly withdrew because it was so hot, and immediately he was shaken out of his meditation. And when he woke from his meditation, he felt a burning sensation on his finger, and when he saw his finger was actually burnt. So what does it mean? That although he was thinking of this whole process in his own mind, but because he had faith and devotion, the deity conceived in his own mind, Krishna, the real Krishna, was actually relating to him, person to person. And whatever he was doing, the milk also was actually there. So this is faith, this is devotion. So this is the process of Bhakti Yoga, where you feel a transcendental reciprocation with the Lord, a give and take. The impersonalist, because his understanding of deity worship is that it is just the impersonal form taken, who has now taken the form of the deity. That impersonalist, they have what is called Pancha Upasana. They worship 5 deities. Who are those 5 deities we have mentioned earlier? Yes? Anyone? Vishnu, Shiva, Shakti, Ganesh and Surya. So they do this Panchopasana, and they worship these 5 deities. And even when they worship Vishnu, but they don't worship the Vishnu who is an expansion of the Supreme Lord, of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. They worship the impersonal Vishnu, because they think that the Lord is actually impersonal, and now He has taken the form of Vishnu. So because of this very offensive mentality, they are not able to worship the deity with any degree of faith and love. How can there be faith and love when you're worshipping the deity of Vishnu and thinking that he's not a person, that he's not actually like this? So where is the question of love and reciprocation? So for them, their deity worship is also very dry. And just like that, their whole process of sadhana is extremely dry and devoid of any higher taste. Whereas the bhaktas, because they take to this wonderful process of bhakti, they are worshipping the deity and finding wonderful reciprocation with the deity, and it is giving them intense bliss. And not only do they worship, but whatever bhoga they have offered, they accept that as prasad. And by tasting prasad, they are happy. They don't have to be extremely austere about their food. They take wonderful prasad, it is so nectarian, so tasty, and side by side, it is also very spiritually purifying. And also, they worship the deity, they chant the holy names in front of the deity, they dance, they chant, they feast. So the whole process of bhakti yoga is chanting, dancing, feasting, hearing wonderful narrations of the pastimes of the Lord and His devotees, Krishna Katha. It is so enlivening, so nectarian, and it becomes more and more relishable as one advances in this path. But for the impersonalist, he doesn't have access to this higher taste. Because the very heart of his philosophy is that Krishna is not a person. So he cannot understand. So there again he has to undergo further trouble. So much trouble he has to undergo. Because he doesn't have the higher taste of the bhakta. So in this shloka we can understand the difference between the process of impersonal realization and the process of bhakti yoga. How wonderful it is. And somehow or the other, even if a person who has been practicing impersonal liberation or realization, somehow by the grace of the Lord or His pure devotee, if he comes to the process of bhakti, one more difficulty that he faces is, it is very difficult for him to accept the personalist philosophy. We have so many examples of this. Among our own devotees here in our mission, earlier they were following the impersonalistic path. And they were reading these impersonalistic books or associating with impersonalistic people. And these ideas were there in their mind. But when they came to Krishna consciousness and they understood the pure Siddhanta or the Siddhanta of pure bhakti and the personality of Godhead, then it was a great struggle, a torment, a great struggle in the mind, a battle was going on in the heart. They wanted to believe that Krishna is the Lord, Supreme Lord, is the personality of Godhead, but the past conditioning due to all this brainwashing of impersonalism, therefore it was very difficult for them. And only by the grace of Lord Krishna and the devotees, by sincerely chanting the holy name and by somehow taking prasad and being in the association, trying to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, somehow they were able to get over their conditioning. So that is one more aspect of Klesho Dhikatarastesham. It is so troublesome. The process is troublesome, and even after that, if you come to bhakti, even then it is troublesome. And if you don't come to bhakti and you go and achieve the final goal, it is also troublesome there because you cannot sustain it. This aspect we will see perhaps next time. And then you have to fall down again. So in other words, the process of impersonal realization is just a path that is fraught with so many troubles and difficulties. Lord Brahma, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he prays to Lord Krishna. And he says, "My dear Lord, the process of bhakti to you is so wonderful, and one who has given up this path of bhakti and taken to the process of impersonal realization of philosophical speculation, such a person is simply inviting trouble and he never attains the desired result. It is like beating empty husks of wheat." You know, the husk of wheat, the covering, the grain is inside the husk. But if you take out the grain and you only beat the husk, what is the benefit? If you're only beating empty husk and there is no wheat, what is the result? No use. Similarly, if you're simply trying to speculate mentally, following the paths of jnana and trying to understand this Brahman, it is simply troublesome, and the only gain is trouble. There is certainly some gain. You get some lab or some gain. But what is that gain? That gain is trouble. Do you want that gain? Does any one of us want only trouble? And what are we getting in return for our trouble? We are not getting bliss. We are not getting eternal life. We are not getting the highest ecstasy of pure bhakti. So therefore, being very clear that our goal of life is to become pure devotees of Lord Krishna, we should resolutely reject this impersonalistic understanding of realization, of understanding of the absolute truth. In the sense, we understand Krishna as an impersonal feature, but we do not think that we want to merge in that. Our goal is Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and nothing less. Hare Krishna. So we will stop here. And we will have some questions for 5 minutes or 10 minutes after that. Are there any questions?
Actually, there is a distinction between an idol and a deity. Now, very often there are places of pilgrimage and people go to worship the deity in that particular place of pilgrimage. And replicas of the same deity are sold in that place and people bring such replicas to their houses. Now, such replicas, would you classify them as idols or deities?
If the original is a bona fide deity, then any replica of that, if you worship with devotion, that also is deity.
And if it is only kept as a decorative piece in your home, would it be called as an idol or a deity?
Well, it is not that Krishna simply comes because of the shape. Krishna comes because of your devotion. Krishna agrees to appear through the medium of that stone, so-called stone, because he is reciprocating with your desire to want to worship him and serve him. So if it's simply just a decorative piece, then we don't call that a deity. A deity means it has to be worshipped. So whether it is formally installed with rites and rituals and mantras and yajnas or not, or whether it is just simply kept in the house and you're worshipping according to your little means. But a deity means one who is accepting your service. That is the principal qualification of a deity. Bona fide form of the Lord as authorized in the Shastras and by the great devotees in which Krishna comes to accept our service. Some had a question here?
So I was absent for the past couple of lectures. So Prabhupada ji says Mayavadi Bhashya Sunile Haya Sarvanash. So in short, for a person in a confrontation, how would you convince him that this Mayavadi concept of yours is totally wrong? Because initially it will be totally brainwashing for him as well as for us trying to convince him. So just in a short span of time, though it's, I mean, quite a huge subject as such, but could we convince him in a short span? Because I have been going through this phase, right?
You cannot convince somebody just in a short span if somebody has been in it for a long time. But of course, the important thing is, first of all, we have to be convinced ourselves. And that is the purpose of all these extended discussions on this subject. So that we become strong enough, so tomorrow somebody comes and tells you this, you should be well equipped to protect your own faith. One way to tackle those situations is to not discuss anything with anyone. But ours is a preaching mission. In the course of our mission, we do not simply want to be devotees ourselves. We also want to see that the whole world will also become devotees. And just like you and I, when we came to this movement, we also had our reservations, we also had our inhibitions, we had our preconceived ideas of reality, of God or no God, whatever it may be. But somehow some devotees were there who took the trouble to explain. Prabhupada wrote so many books, took so much trouble. So therefore we should also take trouble to explain to people Krishna's message in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should very clearly understand that message, be convinced of it, be strongly rooted in that philosophy and its practice in our own life, and then we can go out and preach it to others. So the first step is always to be firmly convinced ourselves. That is the reason, as I explained earlier, that we are repeating and going through all the basic points again and again and again. So we should become solid in our foundation of our philosophy. And then, if we just go through some of the previous things, maybe we can discuss later because it will take too much time. But essentially what we want to convey to them is that Krishna is a person in the ultimate understanding, as stated in so many slokas in the Bhagavad Gita itself, what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that the Bhagavan understanding of the Absolute Truth is the highest understanding.
Okay, I happen to discuss with the Islam people.
Can you speak a little louder?
Recently I happened to discuss with one of the colleagues who follows the Islam.
Islam.
Islam. And in order to make him listen what I hear, what I say, I happen to hear him a long time. So in the process I learn what really they believe. What they believe is death is ultimately an examination, where if one's deeds in the past, in the life, is past activities, then they will be promoted to the heaven, otherwise the hell. And they believe that is end of it, and they eternally either be in heaven or hell. So because they believe in so strong, according to the, when you correlate the same thing with our philosophy, then they should be either in hell or heaven eternally.
Well, that is also the Christian conception. Eternity damned to hell. But as Prabhupada explains, God is very kind. He will never damn His children to hell eternally. He will never send His children, even if they have made the greatest mistake. They will be sent to the hellish planets for some temporary punishment, but eventually they will be brought back. So the Vaishnava understanding, the Vedic understanding, is from the point of view of many, many lifetimes. But because this understanding is not so clearly expressed in the Bible and the Quran, so therefore these concepts are not very much clearly brought out in those scriptures. But nevertheless, for those who are expert, who have really understood the essence of both those scriptures, even there you will find among a certain sects of Islam and Christianity, they do understand and accept that there is previous life, next life, there is a continuity. All the Vaishnava principles, they are there in germ form in the Bible and Quran, for those who have the eyes to see.
But ultimately, whatever is the cult, he believes, a person, as an individual, believes that he either eternally in the hell or heaven. Then, according to our philosophy, when you correlate, yam yadamam prapadyante, that verse is, so that has to be fulfilled, because Krishna promises. So either he must be in eternally hell or in hellish heaven.
You see, Krishna will fulfill everyone's desire. But eventually what Krishna will do to devotees like this is he will uplift him to a higher understanding. He will uplift him to a higher understanding of the absolute truth, so he begins to understand that there is previous life, next life, the heaven, hell, beyond this heaven and hell, there is paradise, there is kingdom of God, Vaikuntha. So gradually if he is following the Quran or following the Bible properly, his understanding will become elevated. And we know for a fact that the Vaishnava understanding of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita is the highest understanding of all. Not because we are following it, but because objectively if you analyze all the descriptions given in these Shastras, nowhere else in any other scripture of the world will you find the same degree of detail and elaborateness with which the absolute truth is explained as in these books. That is why we are so fortunate to be born in this land of Bharatvarsha. Right from childhood, people are hearing about Ram, Krishna, they are hearing about Atma. Even the common man on the street, the fruit seller, the laborer, he also knows that there is a past life. According to what he has done in the past life, he will get a future life, karma. He knows that God is there, God is looking. So you see, even a common man, the poor laborer on the street of India, he is more spiritually advanced than the big PhDs in the American countries, in the Western countries. So therefore, this is our great fortune, that we are born here. Therefore, this is called Punya Bhumi. Only after somebody has done a lot of Punya can he be born in Bharatvarsha. And there you are now in a position to understand this highest philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Point, yes.
So which cult you are following, which is giving the deeper understanding? It's a question of an individual, it's a question of faith. What is he believing? So it's not a question of which cult is explaining more in deep. More and more realizations. It's not that question. It's a question of faith.
Yes, so according to your faith, you will get the result. Krishna will give you, as you yourself rightly quoted, ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sathaiva bhajami aham. Whatever your degree of faith, with whatever approach you are coming to the Supreme Lord, Krishna will fulfill that particular desire. Krishna will reciprocate with you according to that particular mentality in which you are approaching Him.
If the person's mentality is that, what they conclude, either eternal hell or eternal
heaven. But they don't want to be eternal in hell. Does anyone want to be eternal in hell?
But they believe, ultimately there's
belief is one thing, but nobody strives for being eternally in hell. They understand, they all want to go to paradise. Even in the Quran, there is mention of paradise. Beyond heaven and hell, there is paradise. And paradise, the kingdom of God, is very clearly mentioned in the Quran. Where there is eternal life. That aspect is very clearly mentioned there. Not in much detail, but it is there. But anyway, this is a technical point of comparative religion, which we shall not get into too much, because our goal is to understand Bhagavad Gita very, very clearly. Otherwise, it may get to be very technical.
As you said, the deity has to hide in jungle against the tyranny of Aurangzeb and all that. So,
yes. There
the faith in the deity will be shaken by all bhaktas, no? Even deity has to hide in jungle instead of showing their power and overpower such person like Aurangzeb.
You see, Krishna does not need to. His deity form is a very confidential form in the sense that he is accessible according to your level of faith, as I was mentioning earlier. If you do not have faith that this statue is Krishna, then you will think he's statue. If you have faith, you will understand he is not a statue, he is a deity form. He is actually Krishna himself. So Krishna will not reveal himself to one who doesn't have faith. If Krishna wants to teach a lesson to somebody, he has enough ways of doing it. He doesn't have to manifest himself through the deity form and perform so many wonderful activities to demonstrate that I am in the deity form. Only those who have faith can understand that Krishna is in the deity form. So Krishna is coming through the agency of time. Where is Aurangzeb now? He's gone. Finished. Nityu sarva harascham. Aurangzeb is finished. Probably because of his bad karma, he must be some insect or germ somewhere, suffering in hellish planets for so many millions of years. So this is a lila of the Lord. The devotees, out of their desire to protect the Lord, they went and hid him in various places so that he would not be destroyed by Aurangzeb and people like that. But there was no need for Krishna to come out and manifest in the deity form. In very special cases he may do that. But that is not the general way that Krishna acts. If Krishna wants to teach a lesson to Aurangzeb, he has already done it through the agency of time and through the agency of death and through the agency of law of karma. The deity form is reserved for those who are devotees, for those who have faith and those who have love. Krishna does not want to manifest miracles through the deity form to the eyes of non-devotees. That is only the privilege of those who are very pure devotees of the Lord. So we will stop here. We will see you again next Wednesday. So please come also on Sunday. Every Sunday we have program here, festival, starting 12:30.